He's the voice of the Columbus Clippers. You can also hear him pre, intermission, and post on the Columbus Blue Jackets radio network, our good buddy Ryan Mitchell. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. Guys, how you doing?
So far, so good. The sun's out. It's not too crazy hot just yet, so we are certainly enjoying the fact that it's not 90 yet, although it might get there on Friday, even on Thursday and into the weekend. But, you know, we're not sweating it out just yet. But certainly wanted to pick your brain on some of these Indians prospects as we get closer to this trading deadline, still about 5 weeks away from it. But, you know, I think the last time we had you on, we were talking about the likes of Yandy Diaz and Francisco Mejia, obviously two names that get a great deal of attention because those are teams, or I should say those are players, rather, that the Indians, you'd like to think, are going to dangle at that trading deadline. And it just looking at the numbers purely here, Francisco Mejia has hit the ball a heck of a lot better than the last time we spoke. I think he was right around the Mendoza line the last time we talked to you. Now he's up into the 250. So what's changed for him all of a sudden?
Well, I'm not entirely sure what has changed exactly, but something has, because in June he's been an entirely different player. He's now 62 games into the season. His batting average after yesterday is at 261. He's got six homers and 34 driven in. And when last we spoke, that might have still been the time when he had the second-to-lowest batting average in the entire International League. And it was only by like 10 thousandths of a point from being dead last. It was like 170. And he just has been making better contact. And I don't know if it was a matter of getting comfortable or what happened, but for 2 months solid, Mejia looked terrible. And there's no other way to say it. His swing was bad. He's an awkward hitter in that he starts with a very upright stance, and as the pitcher goes into his motion, he goes into a crouch. And I thought maybe that that changing of the eye level was going to hamper him against more advanced pitchers, and it certainly did for two solid months. Something has changed, though. I don't know if it took him that long to maybe adjust to the level, but he's hitting the ball with authority. Yesterday, in his first at-bat, he had an at-bat that was just really incredible, I thought. He went down the count quickly, 0-2. And then he got a pitch batting from the left side where it was out, maybe even off the plate and up in the zone a little bit, and he was fooled. It was an off-speed pitch. He was out on his front foot but kept the hands back and just flicked the bat at the last moment. He was committed to a swing, but he was able to slow himself down enough just to punch the ball into left field, and it turned into a base hit. In April, he's out by a country mile. He never would have touched that ball. So things are going much, much better for him. I think he's trusting his hands more. I mean, he's not going to be a 30-homer guy, but he's probably going to hit 15 home runs, that sort of thing here at this level when he's right. If he does what he's doing right now for an entire season, I think he can hit here. But because it's been such a drastic change, I'm not all in yet buying it. Because as much as you can have two bad months, you can also have one good month. He's probably not as good a hitter as he is this month, but he's certainly not as bad a hitter as he was in April and May. So things are trending in the right direction for Mejia. He's playing quite a bit in the outfield. He's been okay behind home. He is still a work in progress in left field. There's no doubt about that. But I think one of the first things you said, I think the Indians will dangle him. I think that as a catcher, his bat provides a lot of value. And if teams think that he's going to hit the way he has his entire career and they can look past what happened the first 2 months of this season, he does have some value on the market.
I get mixed reactions when I ask about what kind of a receiver he is. As you've had the chance now to watch him throughout the course of the year, how would you grade him out as a catcher? You mentioned that, you know, he's played some in the outfield, and I think the Indians wanted to do that at the beginning of the year, not knowing what their outfield rotation would look like, and that's kind of been a revolving door. But what is he like as a receiver behind the dish?
Let me answer the question this way, and you can read between the lines. Last year, the Indians tried to make him a third baseman, and this year they've tried to make him an outfielder. Now, if you've got a guy that you think is a really, really good catcher, you don't do that. So Francisco is okay behind home plate. His arm is really strong. He's got a really strong throwing arm. He's just not a big guy. He's a small frame. You don't typically see that from catchers. And there was an article over the offseason where they talked about him with Sandy Alomar Jr., and I was kind of looking in between what Sandy was saying about him and thinking maybe they don't know if his frame can hold up over a whole season of catching. Because usually you got, I mean, you know, not 6'5 guys like Matt Wieters, that's an outlier as well, but your catchers are usually fairly strong, big, stout guys, and he is not that. He runs much better than a catcher. He's been pretty good on the bases all season long, but I don't think he's going to make anybody forget Benny Santiago. But again, with his bat at that position, it plays very well. So if you can live with a guy who can maybe get the job done, if not be spectacular behind home plate, then Mejia provides value as a catcher, and he's been doing more catching than playing in the outfield. Okay, so let me get the numbers here. In fact, I have them right in front of me. Francisco Mejia has played 21 games in the outfield, and he's been a catcher 33 times. He's also been a DH a handful of times when the situation calls for that. But I think of the two catchers the Clippers have right now, Eric Haas is the more advanced defensively.
That makes perfect sense, and I think, as you mentioned, you can read between the lines. You know, if you have a great catching prospect, you don't want him to do anything but catch, so certainly there's something to them putting him in the outfield. You mentioned he's a work in progress out there. I mean, I think people look at the outfield position, any one of the three, and say, okay, it can't be too tough to pick up from a different position. But, boy, are there a lot of instincts at play. There are a lot of things that you have to learn, especially going out there after having caught, because it's a totally different perspective. Is this something that he's going to need the rest of the season to try and figure out as he continues to play left? That's where he's playing, right? I mean, has he been playing right at all?
He's been playing left field. I'm trying to think if he has played any right field at all, maybe just on a really short-term basis. But it's been almost exclusively, if not exclusively, left field. And, you know, like you said, it's not like Lonnie Chisenhall going from the infield to the outfield or Jason Kipnis going from the outfield to the infield. It's you're looking at the game from the entire opposite angle from what you would do as a catcher. And he has played, by the way, as I pull up the numbers here, one game in right field, but that has been an outlier. So he's looking at the play from the other side. His tracking of fly balls, I think, has been fine. Sometimes, you know, judging where a ball is going to be off the wall or going into the gap where the other outfielder is going to be, being right on where to make the play. There are times coming in on balls where maybe he's a bit tentative because, I mean, that's an acquired skill. You have to do thousands and thousands of man hours of that job to be confident to do it right, whereas Gregg would dive and make the catch. But he is not comfortable doing that yet because he's not an outfielder. He's been a catcher, and that's really all he has done in his professional career. He had one game in the outfield in rookie league, and then last year one game in Akron at third base, and then played third base in the Arizona Fall League. So it's obviously something they're trying to do to round him out a bit defensively, make him more versatile, I guess. But I think they're trying to find a spot where he can play. And also it's organizational as well, because you mentioned the outfield was a bit in flux coming into the season. So they want to find a spot where his bat can play. So if that's in the outfield, if that's at third base, if it's behind home plate, they like Frankie Mejia's bat an awful lot, and they want him to develop and play at the major league level with a bat in his hand for the Indians.
We're talking with Ryan Mitchell with the Columbus Clippers here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. I want to transition into another guy who I know we've discussed before, but he's worth bringing up again, in Yandy Diaz. And, you know, it seems like he's hitting all right. He's a shade under 300, but it just doesn't seem like those power numbers have come around the way I think a lot of people were hoping that they would this year. Just 15 doubles. That's not a bad number, but over the course of 62 games, sure, you'd like a little more. Just the one long ball on the season, if I'm looking at the right numbers right now. But what is it about him that just hasn't translated? I mean, a guy that size, you expect a heck of a lot more power, and it just doesn't seem like they're getting that from him.
It's all about his approach. He just does not ever try and pull the baseball, and with his swing, he's not necessary. I mean, the whole thing coming into the year, launch angle, launch angle, launch angle. But Yandy doesn't care about that. Yandy, at the major league level, has a negative launch angle, which means he's hitting, on average, ground balls. Well, he can't hit ground balls for home runs very, very often, right? So he's got the one home run on the year, and he had it actually playing first base. Yandy has played 4 or 5 games now at first base, and his only home run came as a first baseman. He's been better. His OPS has been better the farther into the order he hits. So when he's been batting cleanup, his OPS is way over 1,100. So he's been leading off. He's hit second. He's hit third. He's hit cleanup. And a lot of the doubles are coming there. So I don't know about Yandy, and it's a strange thing. He's an interesting case study because he's almost 27 years old. So he is no spring chicken. And this is a guy who, if he wants to find himself with the Indians on a major league team, well, they got a guy at third. They got a guy at second right now in Jason Kipnis. And if Kipnis goes away, they got a guy at third who's going to play second. And he's not had the kind of success at the major league level, even of an Eric Gonzalez. So, and again, with those, like you were talking about, big, strong guy, his arms are as big as my head. When he hits the ball, it makes noise. I talked about his launch angle. It was one of the worst in baseball in the majors when he played there, but his exit velocity was one of the best. So he always hits it hard. He leads the league in walks. He leads the league in on-base percentage. He is so stubborn in the strike zone. I think sometimes that hurts him with his lack of aggression going after what could be drivable pitches. He won't swing at anything that he thinks is not only out of the strike zone, but out of his sweet spot. So I think sometimes he misses opportunities to do damage. And it's the progression of a hitter, but again, he's going to have to progress here pretty quickly because he is getting to the age where you're no longer a prospect. You're just trying to figure things out in the minors.
Yeah, if he's getting into his late 20s, you're right. Age certainly becomes a factor, and you wonder how much tradability there might be there as well. So going to be interesting to see how he develops. Ryan, before we let you go, a couple weeks away from the All-Star game. I know you guys have a lot of really cool things lined up throughout the course of the week. What kinds of details can you share with us on the AAA All-Star game?
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Just yesterday, we put single event tickets on sale, so you can get those at ClippersBaseball.com. And there's so much going on. We not only have the All-Star game, but we also have the AAA National Championship game here in September. So you can buy a 3-pack that'll get you a ticket to the championship game, the All-Star game. And Monday is our skills competition, Monday, July 9th. Now, the Major League All-Star Week moved back a week this year, so we don't share the All-Star Week with the majors. So July 9th, we're going to have what's called a skills competition and home run derby at Huntington Park. We're going to have pitchers bunting for accuracy. We're going to have outfielders do a couple of hoops to home. The hoops will light up if they get them through. We're going to have hitters going through situational hitting. And then we're also going to have the home run derby. And for anybody that hasn't been down to Huntington Park, it's a home run yard. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see that home run derby. The whole thing's going to be broadcast live, the skills competition on Spectrum Sports. So people around the Buckeye State that have Spectrum, they can watch it. We'll start our broadcast at 6:30, and it should go to about 10 o'clock. And then the All-Star game will be on Wednesday, the 11th. And that'll be on the air in every AAA market. And, of course, with the MILB app, TuneIn Radio, all that stuff, you can find that. And then it'll also be broadcast on tape delay the following week on MLB Network. They'll do a separate broadcast, they'll tape it, and then they'll run it on MLB Network the next week during the Major League All-Star break as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Tickets, again, at mailbookersbaseball.com, and you can get a ticket for each of the individual events, or you can buy a multi-pack to get in. And the sales have been pretty good, so if you want to get tickets, get them while they're hot, because I am expecting that we're going to be at capacity for all of these events.
Very cool stuff. Again, that's July 11th, the AAA All-Star Game. Ryan, always a pleasure, my friend. We appreciate the time. Best of luck against those Louisville Bats tonight, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Have a good one.
Thanks, you too. Again, Ryan Mitchell with the Columbus Clippers joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.